Episode 95, Milk Street Simple by Christopher Kimball. Hi, Johnny.
Back by popular demand. We were just talking about that, how we kind of got lazy and took a break from this for a while. And then to our surprise, we had a lot of people asking.
It blows my mind.
When are you doing a podcast next? And then like since we've published a couple episodes recently.
Yeah. And we've actually gotten feedback that people are like, we're glad you're back.
Yeah. So it's good to be back.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Welcome to Tasty Pages, a podcast from Cooking the Books. Before we dive into this fun-filled episode, I will get a little housekeeping stuff out of the way. If you go to our website, wecookbooks.com, click on that store tab. That will direct you to our Amazon.com affiliate page. We've got a few lists there. We've got kitchen essentials for home cooks. We've got our favorite cookbooks. We've got food photography and styling equipment. We've got fun food finds. It's the holiday season.
Yes.
What better way to get something for the food-obsessed person in your life?
I feel like I need to go in and zhuzh that up a little bit.
You know, I actually did add a few things. So okay. Anyone who does visit that link will find a few things that were recently added. And I'm trying to get better about, like, when I think of it, I'll just go on and, like, add an item to the list. But yeah, there's a few things that I
see. I just don't do anything because I'm lazy. I'm the albatross in this operation.
You are the voice of reason in this, and I provide the stupid humor.
I'll take it.
But yeah, so check it out. Thank you for your support. And if you like what we're doing, that's probably the most immediate way that you can support our little operation. And please tell a friend. Word of mouth is probably the best way to spread the word about what we are doing. Ooh, what are we drinking? What are you drinking?
I am drinking an orange spice tea. I meant to grab a vanilla bean macaroon tea, but I grabbed the wrong one.
You gonna be okay with that?
I think I'm fine
with it. Okay. I mean, they're both in the cupboard, which means that at some point you bought both.
Yes.
And presumably you like them
both. I enjoy both of them.
Yes.
So.
You just got your hopes up for the one, and then...
You know when you're expecting something, and then you just get something else, and it's a little bit of a letdown, but not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things.
I feel you. I'm drinking a Mr. Brown's cappuccino iced coffee. It's how I get my daily allowance of sodium bicarbonate and soy lecithin, and also 26% of my daily allowance of added sugars. That's good, huh?
Well, that was
for a little 8-ounce can.
That was a fascinating peek into your
psyche,
nutritional endeavors. Thanks.
Yeah, this is I think it's funny that people will buy those really expensive, Starbucks coffee drinks and whatnot in the store that are like $4 a bottle or can or whatever, and then you go to any, and it's not even limited to like Asian grocery stores any longer. I think these are pretty common in a lot of grocery stores.
Yeah,
and they're
$1.50, mm-hmm.
And you know they satisfy that craving.
How many ounces is that? That's like,
8.12. They give you 1.12 extra than what you're expecting. See, just what we were talking about. What a pleasant surprise.
And it's not a million calories either.
It's those, 110. Yeah. 110.
110.
Why don't we mention what we're currently working on cookbook-wise?
Do
you have that information in front of you?
It's right.
Look at this professional operation. You've got your tablet out with the wireless keyboard attached to it. It's almost like it's official or something.
I know.
This is pro operation.
I look very official.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you need to hire an assistant to manage your workflow? That's the next level when you have an assistant.
Oh my God! Shut up.
They won't fuck up your tea, and if they do, you can fire them. I specifically said coconut macaroon. Is that what you said?
No, coconut. Vanilla. Do you not listen to a word?
No, I do, but I get confused easily. I very much listen to you.
In your own special way.
I just get confused easily.
Okay, so we are working on, we just started Son Mat by Monica Lee. We are making our second thing from there tonight.
Yeah, so it's Korean home cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for it.
I love Korean food so much. And then we're also working through Snacking Bakes. I just made blueberry white chocolate blondies.
Which is quite a feat for someone who professed to hate white chocolate.
I know, right?
And you're okay with it.
I think maybe I'm, I'm not going to go out and buy a bar of white chocolate or seek it out. But now I won't actively avoid it. Like if there's a cookie that has a few white chocolate chips, I'm okay with it.
Who says you can't evolve?
I know,
right?
Look
at you embracing the white chocolate.
I feel like I'm getting so much more grown up. I'm like rediscovering things. I mean,
you got this tablet with a keyboard.
My tablet that's like 10 years old.
Still going.
It's still going.
And we're also working our way through Good Drinks by, I think it's Julia Bainbridge is the author. And that's going to be an upcoming feature for Dry January because it's all NA beverages. So it fits in perfectly with our current state.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is for dinner tonight?
For dinner, we are doing a rolled omelet.
This will be interesting because we've done something similar before.
We've never made a rolled omelet because we don't have the correct pan. And we're finally being like, yeah, let's just use a regular pan.
It'll be fine with a circular rather than the recommended square pan.
Yes.
I have faith. We can do it. Oh, we've been working our way through holiday movies.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning with, right when Thanksgiving happened. We held off until then because all these people that start celebrating Christmas the day after Halloween can suck it.
Oh, it bums me out so much. There's nothing worse than walking into like Target and you're inundated with all the Christmas stuff and it's the middle of fall.
Let's do one holiday at a time, folks.
I know.
Skipping past Thanksgiving. And speaking of Thanksgiving, so day after Thanksgiving, we start things off with Dutch.
Classic. Yes, I love
Ed
Dutch.
O'Neill. Oh, could watch that a million times and probably have. And then we haven't yet watched it, but we should find Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because that's another Thanksgiving movie. Those are the only two I can really think of that are kind of like lean into the Thanksgiving holiday rather than Christmas.
Apparently there was a Thanksgiving movie that was released this year. It was called Thanksgiving.
Okay.
I believe.
We might have to check that out.
Sure.
We might have to investigate.
But I don't want to pay for it in the movie.
But then, we've been continuing on that path since and, the shittier, the better. So if for instance, you've got this movie that features Ed Helms. Is that who?
It is called The Family Switch, and it's like Freaky Friday, but make it Christmas.
But that's the name, right? From the Office?
Ed Helms. Ed Helms.
Okay.
And then Jennifer Garner.
Right. Yep.
And if you've seen the show Wednesday's adorable little roommate, the blonde-haired girl.
Yep,
is
she's in
that.
It too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a good way to describe it. There's nothing more frustrating than movies that get shoehorned into that Christmas or holiday category, and the premise is just something generic where it just because it takes place at Christmas is not really an integral part of the plot or the movie, but they just figure it'll attract
like
more viewers or something. Or it's just a shitty movie, and they figured like if they do it with a Christmas theme that will, make it better somehow.
Yeah, we just watched one like that, and it took place in California, and the only way that you knew that it was Christmas was because occasionally you would see a Christmas decoration here or there.
Right.
Like,
but it didn't need to be classified as a Christmas movie.
It could have been set in the middle of summer.
But, I'm here for it. Even those things I find amusing to watch, so
oh, yeah.
Even if it's a terrible movie, I'm here for it.
We started a movie called Candy Cane Lane. Which
oh, yeah.
is
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
We started it, didn't finish it because we're old and we get tired.
These are very low stakes movies. I don't have any investment in them. If I get tired and want to turn in for the night, I don't feel the need to.
I'm like, not like, oh, I gotta finish
fight
this
it
one.
And stay up.
You gotta
yeah.
see how it
no,
ends.
It'll be there for me tomorrow. Food news. I had a few things that I wanted to talk about that I found. The first being this article from our local Minneapolis St. Paul magazine. It's called Minneapolis St. Paul magazine. Clever, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about lutefisk. For those that do not know, lutefisk is a Scandinavian. I hesitate to say delicacy. It's not really a delicacy. This article is entitled "Why Do People Still Eat Lutefisk?" And it's basically, you know, explaining first what it is. It's a lye-soaked method of preserving whitefish, mm-hmm. usually cod, that originated pre-refrigeration. So you're taking this perishable item and trying to make it shelf-stable. And it renders this fish into like a big gelatinous blob. It's like the only way I can describe it. There's a store down the street that's been there for, mm-hmm. God, probably 100 years. It's called Ingebrigtsen's. We can literally walk there from our condo. On the third Saturday in October every year, they have a lutefisk tasting day where you can sample some lutefisk for free. So if you're curious about it, if you're lutefisk curious...
Wear your eating pants for this occasion.
Right? You'll need them. They will provide a sample. So it's a nice gateway, you know... Because normally you'd have to buy lutefisk in larger portions, half a pound or whatever. This is a way that you can sample it without that monetary investment. Around this time of year in the holidays, they sell a couple thousand pounds of lutefisk.
To whom?
I don't know. There's a local Norwegian church called Minderkirken. I love it. They host 168-person seatings for their biannual lutefisk dinner. There's a Bethlehem Lutheran Church. It's always the Lutheran churches.
What's up with the Lutherans?
And their love of lutefisk. They host a 650-person dinner featuring lutefisk. So the demand is there. I don't know who these people are, but in this day and age when this method of food preservation is no longer necessary...
Yeah.
Inexplicably, people still flock to the lutefisk, and it's kind of a traditional holiday food item. It will not be making an appearance in our kitchen.
To me, that's like eating like the fermented shark from Iceland.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Why? I mean, and I tried that, and no. No, thank you.
You ever heard of Madison, Minnesota?
No.
Self-proclaimed lutefisk capital of the world.
Awesome. Let him have it.
Yeah, no one's competing for that title. Now, their claim to this title dates back to the 1980s when Olsen Fish Company, the largest producer in the world of lutefisk.
Is it S-E-N
oh, yeah, you
or
can assume
S-S-O-N?
That all these, you can assume that all these Scandinavian names that I'm mentioning are feature E's instead of O's.
Okay, okay. All right.
Hardcore Scandinavian.
Okay.
Olsen Fish Company, largest producer in the world, they discovered that they were selling more lutefisk to Madison, Minnesota than any other locale. And so I guess thus the town decided to embrace that title. Every fall, they host Norse Fest, which is a whole event where they have a festival with arts, shopping, bingo, gotta have bingo in the Midwest with Scandinavians, and a lutefisk eating contest. Mark your calendar, Victoria.
Ugh, it just sends it like sends my throat into like paroxysms of like, oh God.
Now, the reigning contest champion, Jerry Osteros.
I want to see these names because I feel like you're butchering
that. Just assume they're all E's. His record is 8.25 pounds 1 year.
Ooh.
Now, they do require that you keep the lutefisk down for at least a minute. And one of the representatives from the contest said, sadly, some people have not been able to meet that challenge throughout the years. So, people make your reservations now because next November, Norse Fest, it's going to come up quicker than you think.
I don't love yucking other people's yums, but lutefisk deeply, deeply disgusts me.
Yeah. And not really necessary in this modern era. I don't know why you'd do that to yourself. I can guarantee there is no one that if you placed a plate of like nice, fresh, properly cooked white fish in front of them with maybe a little bit of lemon or some seasoning or something. Or the gelatinous blob. Like, no one would choose the gelatinous blob.
You know what? There are people that... I think there are people that have real issues with, like, that kind of texture. I know I do.
Understandably.
But there are some people who find it really, really pleasing. So, you know, maybe... there's just not that.
So you
that,
think someone has a preference for seafood snot?
Seafood
snot. I want to know who this person is. I want to have a conversation with them. All right. In other news, this next article comes courtesy of Food and Wine. Red Lobster, in an effort to boost traffic through their restaurants, launched a all-you-can-eat shrimp for $20.
Okay, so when did this get launched? Because I feel like they have been doing endless shrimp for years. Like, I remember seeing ads for it on TV. Maybe they just, like, changed the price or something. But I know they've been doing this for
a
long time.
This made it sound like this was what started off as, like, a limited campaign. And then because of its popularity, it is now, like, a permanent offering on the menu, but they did not anticipate the amount of demand for it, and as a result they posted an operating loss for the third quarter of 2023 of $11 million. That's a lot of free shrimp or endless shrimp that people ate, and what it resulted in was they had to increase the price to $25 per person, but it's still on the menu as I understand it.
That's insane.
Not being a Red Lobster customer, I can't give you the specifics of it, but
right.
That's what it is.
I'm sure people are going there.
Endless shrimp.
I'm sure people are going there with, like, containers. And ordering
plate. Oh, you think?
Yes, of course. I mean, people will pull up to buffets with containers. And
that reminds me of when I was in my early 20s and kind of like a starving artist. And a friend of mine and I used to go into Godfather's for their all-you-can-eat buffet. And he would bring a duffel bag and we'd load it up with slices of pizza.
See, if people are going to do it with pizza, they're damn well sure going to do it. Oh, that was the first time I cussed this episode.
Just plan accordingly. And bring a cooler, because the last thing you want is a duffel bag full of shrimp sitting in your car during the summer.
I don't know. There are, like, restaurants who will buy shrimp out of, like, a car trunk in the middle of summer.
That's really a thing?
They're not good restaurants, but there, you know, there are places who have various nefarious sources.
How well do you think the Endless Ludifist campaign would go over at Red Lobster?
Probably not well.
Oh, they wouldn't have to worry about losing money.
No.
They'll just stick to the shrimp. Now, you're offered two choices of this list: garlic shrimp scampi, coconut shrimp, shrimp linguine Alfredo, Walt's favorite shrimp. I don't know who Walt is or how his favorite shrimp is prepared. I'm assuming it doesn't come out of a trunk or a duffel bag.
No. Okay, so...
And then garlic shrimp skewer.
Okay, so see, I didn't read this article so that you could, like.
Oh, I thought you were a professional. Was your assistant supposed to
read
it?
No, because would you shut up? Because I wanted to ask you questions.
Okay.
Okay, so you can only choose
two from this list,
but you can eat as much as you want.
Apparently, that's why they call it endless shrimp.
See, but that's
there's no conditions that apply.
See, but that's kind of lame. That, like, your variety is so limited.
Do you think,
like,
people really
what
need
if,
to
what if
sample?
I want Alfredo and scampi and garlic
pick
shrimp
two?
Well,
come back,
I don't know,
come back tomorrow, pick two others for dessert. Chocolate shrimp cheesecake.
Shut up.
No, it's not a thing. There's no dessert options. So, you know, this might just be the thing that puts Red Lobster out of business. So if you want to take advantage of this campaign, do it soon. They can't just keep losing millions of dollars every quarter.
Poor Darden.
Because of you greedy shrimp eaters.
Poor Darden Foods just making bad decisions.
Yep. So that's what I got for food news.
Thank you. I was highly entertained, Balmer.
I'm sure. Thanks for faking interest. All right. Before we discuss this book, our show topic for this week is What food would you ban from your office microwave? And this was kind of interesting because not having really worked in an office for a few decades, I wanted to see what the response would be.
Have you really ever worked in an office setting?
Not really.
I mean, but I've worked places like where there's a, break room.
Yeah,
every place has a break room.
Of course.
See, I think this is kind of a not great question because there's really only a couple answers that you can.
We knew going into it what the overwhelming answer would be, and that would be any kind of fish. But let's share a few others and discuss if necessary. What do you got?
Kimberly R. said, this is a hilarious one. Can't wait to see responses. Even though it's something I love, I never bring fish to work.
That should just be a given. Unless you have a duffel bag of shrimp from Red Lobster and you can go out to your car and eat that in solitude. That's allowed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't bring anyone with you. Yeah, so fish. Our friend Lee D. said, obviously fish, but also turkey. Hurl. Yeah, I have to say I'm not the biggest turkey fan to begin with, and it does have like a unpleasant aroma.
No, it doesn't.
To me, it does.
Okay,
I can totally see turkey being.
But there, I can't. So. I like if someone heated up some turkey in the microwave, I wouldn't be like, "What the fuck did you just heat up?"
You know, I have to say, like, there are a lot of things that I think would be kind of unpleasant smelling in a microwave in general. Just leftovers heated up in a microwave, regardless of what they are, is just kind of it's rarely going to smell good as if it were like something that were simmering on your stovetop or something.
You're funny because like when we eat leftovers, you barely ever use the microwave. You always eat them and I'm like, I'm just going to chuck them in.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of microwave other than heating up coffee and stuff. Mm. What else you got?
Let's see. Cat B said any type of fish, Brussels sprouts and burnt popcorn.
Yes.
Burnt popcorn is another good one because the smell is so pervasive.
Yes.
The microwave will smell like that for 3 weeks.
Yes. Melissa G said cabbage leftovers. Yes, yes. Broccoli or cauliflower or both and kimchi. All good answers, and I have to agree.
Yes. At Foodie 17 Feed said anything with lamb in it.
Okay.
I could see that because it tends to go a little bit gamey. Like, I can see how it would smell a little bit gamey.
Yeah, and I would even just add, like, meat in general. Like, if you're going to reheat a meat dish in a microwave, it's probably not going to smell the greatest. And it would probably be offensive to many because a lot of people do not eat meat. So I can totally see that, like, in a work environment where you're trying to be courteous of others, don't reheat meat in the microwave.
Fuck that. If I have a hamburger that I want to brand, I'm going to heat it up. Are you kidding me? Sorry, call me inconsiderate, but I mean,
rude.
Because I don't think it's like an offensive food. It doesn't stink like fish or cruciferous vegetables.
You're fired.
Yeah, well.
All right. Anything else? At Merlianne7 said all of it.
So
I'm kind of in the all of it camp.
Yeah, you are.
Just no microwaves allowed.
Yeah.
Yep. Eat a sandwich or a salad.
Yes.
What'd you have for your picks?
For my picks, fish and cruciferous vegetables, which are like the broccoli, the cabbages.
Asparagus, no?
I don't believe asparagus is included in that.
Microwave asparagus would not
taste good. But I'm
sure
it wouldn't smell good.
No. I co-sign the seafood. Stuffed animals are also not good, as I learned during my brief tenure at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, yeah. Those tend to melt and blow
up. Yeah, if you put one of those skee ball stuffed animals that you win for your girlfriend in a microwave, it's going to billow green smoke and toxic fumes. And you may or may not be relieved of your duties at Chuck E. Cheese. Not that I'm talking from experience or anything. just letting you know. Okay. Milk Street Simple from Christopher Kimball. What can we say about this? It's probably about the sixth book from the Milk Street Kitchen that we have featured in our feed. I will say, even though this book was probably we're not like the target audience for it mm-hmm. because it's geared very much toward like beginner cooks and building confidence in the kitchen and people that are just starting out. We know that they're going to be like solidly tested. They're going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that stuck out to me was like their ability to just like keep these as simple as possible, edit them. There's no unnecessary ingredients in the recipe. And they really showed great restraint with, because there was, and we'll talk about this in a second, but there was a lot of the dishes where I was like, oh,
yeah,
be nice if it had this yep. or this. But they did a great job of kind of keeping it as simple as possible, yet still tasty and making it as unintimidating as possible
mm-hmm.
For a new cook. And without further ado, why don't you mention what we made, and then we'll circle back and discuss them in agonizing detail.
All right.
How's that sound?
That sounds amazing. We made a potato poblano sweet corn hash, black pepper garlic chicken fried rice, Bharat spiced beef and butter toasted pine nut rice bowls, broiled ginger and yogurt shrimp, and finally cilantro garlic lime marinated pork skewers.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk this potato poblano and sweet corn hash.
Okay, so we did this a little bit different because the method calls for cooking the potatoes in water in the microwave. Hey.
We also forgot the poblano.
What did we use?
We used green pepper.
That's right.
That's another one that you're coming around to. Green pepper
yes!
and white chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time, you'd talk about your dislike of green pepper. And I asked you if you'd be okay with using that because that was something I could get at our little market downstairs without having to make a special journey for poblano.
Yep.
Totally my fault. And to my surprise, you were like, sure, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the dish suffered.
Look at me growing. Although, you know what? I used to love black olives and now I hate them.
Really?
Yeah. Like the big ones that you would stick on your fingers when they're in the relish tray.
Maybe that's why you hate them, because you don't feel comfortable doing that. If you want to do that in the comfort of our own home, put them on your fingers,
walk
little finger caps.
Just walk
that
around.
That never gets old.
Walk around doing jazz hands with some
of course.
On my fingers.
No judgment here.
Oh, I think you'd be judging me a little bit.
All right, so you were talking about potatoes.
Okay, potatoes.
No microwave potatoes okay. for us.
So we tossed our potatoes in the air fryer. This has bacon, which you cook first, and then you cook the onion and the pepper in some reserved bacon fat in the same pan. Like we said earlier, these are super simple.
My guess is they use the microwave technique, assuming that a lot of new inexperienced cooks would have a microwave, but probably mm-hmm. not an air fryer. And they want to make this as simple as possible. And
yeah.
So,
well, I mean, you could do, oh, Jesus, let me. I mean,
are you hungry? Are you eating the microphone?
I'm raising my voice like I'm angry. You could also do the potatoes in the oven too.
Correct.
So anyway, so you cook your onion, your pepper, then you add your corn, cook that for a few minutes, then you reintroduce your potatoes and bacon.
How'd you feel about the onion amount?
I was fine with it.
Because I thought it bordered on a little too much, personally.
See, when onions are cooked, I usually don't find it to be too much.
But you still want it to be balanced. I felt like the dish collectively had a little bit too much onion in it.
That was my thought. Personally, not for me, because I love cooked onion. So it didn't. However, if we were talking like some raw onion, I'd be like, yes, that's too much.
Okay, fair.
So I'm to me, I guess maybe that's just my personal taste.
Yeah.
But this, like for me, this read as breakfast for dinner.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
The savory breakfast, I always associate with like a hangover.
Yes.
And I feel like when I feel shitty in the morning, the only time that I want a savory breakfast is then. Otherwise, I go for like sweet, like pancakes.
Or lutefisk.
Or French toast.
Oh, can you imagine lutefisk when you're hungover?
Ooh. I mean, if you are feeling like you need to vomit, you know how you wake up and you have that disgusting, gross stomach?
You'd lose that contest in Madison, Minnesota yes. if you didn't hold it down. Now, they did recommend some optional garnishes at the end of the recipe, such as crumbled cheese, cilantro, diced avocado. They're not included on the shopping list for the ingredients. And that's something we can discuss mm-hmm. when we get to our rankings. But had I seen that, I probably would have at least got some kind of cheese, like a crumbly cheese, or some diced avocado, I think would have been good on it. And so that's just one thing where you know, I should follow my own advice right. when we teach those classes and read the recipe in its entirety. And then I would have caught that. But just something to be aware of.
I think you could toss an egg on there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yep. Anything else on this?
No. What do you have to say about it,
No,
sir?
I mean, this is all stuff that I'm just mentioning to you as we're discussing it, so I have nothing more to say on it.
All right.
I appreciated doing the air fryer
method I did too.
For the potatoes, because I just think it the results are much better, much more satisfying. Black pepper, garlic, chicken, fried rice. Correct me if I'm wrong. We had at least two or three rice dishes from this book, mm-hmm. or they were a component in the recipes.
Well, there was one like serve it with rice.
Right.
And then obviously we had the fried rice.
So knowing that that was going to be the case with this book, I think we just cooked a larger amount of rice for one of the meals. It might have even been this one. Mm-hmm. And then we had the leftovers already ready for some of the other
nope,
recipes.
We did the Bharat spiced.
Gotcha. And then we came back to this mm-hmm. one. That makes sense, because you're supposed to use like cooked rice that mm-hmm. was left over. So what else to say about this?
What do you say? It's fried rice. It's easy. It's good. I mean, it wasn't adventurous. It's chicken thighs and soy sauce and rice vinegar.
Did it call for thighs or breasts, or did it give you the option? Do you recall?
I don't recall, but
okay.
No matter what, we always use. I'm pretty sure it called for thighs.
Yeah.
We always use thighs.
We garnish. Need to get a shirt made. Always thighs.
Always
never
thighs.
Never breasts.
I'm a leg man.
That won't attract judgmental stares
right?
from anyone out in public when I'm wearing it.
Although I think it'd be kind of funny if I wore a shirt that said, I'm a leg man.
It absolutely would be.
I'm a leg man. And it'd have just, like a little drumstick on it.
It would just look, I would just look like a creep.
Anyone want to make me a shirt that says I'm a leg man with a fried chicken leg on it?
There you go.
I would love it.
So yeah, black pepper, garlic, fried rice. It was delicious. I think we even had a little bit left over. Not going to complain about that.
Mm-hmm.
Bharat spiced beef and butter toasted pine nut rice bowls. Just rolls off the tongue. So this is kind of a Lebanese-inspired dish.
Mm-hmm. It starts by, we have pine nuts that are accompanying the dish. Those start off by getting browned in some butter. You set them aside. Bharat is a spice blend. It's like sweet and warm spices like black pepper, coriander, cumin, cinnamon. It doesn't give any exact measures. So if you want to like make your own, you'll have to look up how to make a blend.
Oh, but just throw book, together a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
I mean, seriously. But the book says just to use cumin and cinnamon.
Good start.
Mm-hmm. And the beef gets cooked with that spice. And this is another super, super simple one. I mean, they're all simple. So maybe I should just stop repeating myself by saying that. The beef, and you can also use lamb.
That's what I was going to suggest. And I almost feel like they develop these recipes with how easy some of this stuff would be to source mm-hmm. in mind. So in this case, they just use beef knowing that, you know, that's going to be a lot easier.
You can find it at every store.
Right, right. Although, even though I think lamb would be
I think
a
it would
more
be
interesting
tastier,
choice.
Yeah. So the beef gets cooked with the spice, and then you add tomato paste. And you kind of let that, I believe it's called sanjay, where you let it get nice and brown. And then you add a little bit of water.
I thought that was like some kind of move that people used when walking down a runway.
That's sachet.
Oh, okay.
Sachet, chante.
Different thing.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Okay.
Anyways,
I don't want to mix up my sanjay and sachet.
You get the caramelized, you get the tomato paste nice and caramelized, and then you deglaze the pan. Then you reduce that and let it get a little bit saucy, and you serve it over rice. And this was hands down my favorite of what we made.
Yeah, this was good. Well, and
the pine nuts gave it this really, it gave it like a really nice, rich feel. It made it feel like a little bit luxurious, just because I like the way that pine nuts.
Fancy.
I like the mouth feel of pine nuts, and I think they're like really rich tasting, so. For me, that's what I got.
Anyway. You got to be rich to afford them.
I know, right?
You can get like a little sample cup full, and they're like $10 or something. I guess this next one is all me.
I have not a thing to say about this.
Royal ginger and yogurt shrimp. So this was another dish chosen for our popular surf and turf nights. What kind of steak did you have?
I had a ribeye.
Victoria made a ribeye as large as her head, and I went with this shrimp dish. Super easy. The shrimp receives a marinade for about 30 minutes, which consists of yogurt, ginger, paprika, lemon zest, and honey. I believe I also threw in a little bit of garlic with it, because why not? And serve this with more rice. I have to admit, after this book, I was pretty burned out on rice for a few days. Originally, we had planned to photograph one or two individual shrimp in a small cup atop a little scoop of rice because we thought it'd be funny. Unfortunately, I added soy sauce to the rice and
I
ruined the white color, and it forced us to kind of pivot at the last minute for our photography choice. But
way to go, Balmer.
I know.
Way to make more work for me,
now,
sir.
I will say my shrimp did not have the same level of char as the book photo, but I also didn't want to overcook them.
Yeah.
They get cooked on a wire rack under the broiler. Delicious.
I don't like cooking under the broiler.
Not
all.
Stuff like shrimp or fish.
Any kind of meat, I hate.
You blink and it could get overcooked. You got to keep an eye on that shit.
Well, anytime anything's under the broiler.
But seafood, most importantly, I think. You don't want to overcook that.
Yeah.
Other stuff you might be able to get away with a little bit of color to it, but.
Unless it's bread, it seems like
you go. I guess that's why people do it in the microwave.
Unless it's bread, because bread seems to go from like golden to
garbage. Golden to garbage.
Blink and
treasure to trash.
Blink and it'll turn.
All right. Then the last dish, cilantro, garlic, and lime marinated pork skewers.
Okay. So this starts with pieces of pork getting marinated in a mixture of cilantro, lime juice, fish sauce, brown sugar, and garlic.
Were they supposed to be grilled? Did it give you
nope.
options? Okay.
Nope.
Okay.
So it gets marinated for at least 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have time, let it go longer, because obviously it's going to taste better the longer it goes.
Although it does have lime juice in it, so you probably don't want it to go overnight.
Right.
Within reason. Marinate within reason.
It'll denature it a little bit.
Turn it into mush.
Oh, this was supposed to be broiled, cooked under the broiler.
Okay.
And we did not do that because I don't like broiling meat. So we did it on our plancha, our cast iron plancha. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time that we actually use it. We don't ever use it because we have an electric stove.
Got to be a little careful with that glass cooktop.
Yeah. So broke out the plancha, used it, worked out great. The pork was nice and flavorful.
And tender. Mm-hmm. I had reservations about how the texture would be, but that marinade really did kind of tenderize it prior to cooking.
Well, it shouldn't have been a problem because we use pork loin, which
right.
is really tender.
Okay, fair. I just didn't want it to be chewy, and I had some concerns, but it worked out. Mm-hmm. That was really tasty. This was another standout from the book for mm-hmm. me personally. And more goddamn rice.
More rice.
That was probably, what, number three or four from the recipes that we chose that featured rice? We had to take a break from the rice for a few days after this. Anything else to say on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Before we discuss our rankings for this, Let's go to the most critical Amazon review. And surprisingly, I did not find any negative reviews or even like mediocre reviews. So this is a very well-received book, at least to date, at the time of this recording. One thing that someone mentioned in their five-star review of this was from Jennifer Guerrero. And she said, important note, most of the recipes have optional ingredients or garnishes at the end of the directions. I circle them when I make up my grocery list to make sure I add those into. I could have taken that advice.
You had mentioned that.
Yep. And I think that's a fair critique of this book. Mm-hmm. It might have been helpful at the end of the ingredient list. And I think when we do our recipes for the classes that we teach at a cooking school here, that's how we treat them. If it's like an optional garnish or if it's just a garnish, we'll make note of that in the recipe list or in the ingredient list. And I think that's helpful just at a glance to see like any possible ingredients you may be using for the recipe.
Rather than waiting till the very end and you're like, oh shit, I needed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's just something simple like parsley or cilantro. I mean, that is things that we normally have on hand, but you never know. So I thought that critique was fair, and it was really the only thing I could pick from the reviews that were offered up. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Without further ado, food photography and styling. What did you have, Victoria?
Okay, so just a note. The photographer was Eric Bernstein, and the stylist was Erica Joyce.
Shout out to them.
Mm-hmm.
I try to acknowledge that now because I feel like that doesn't get...
Yeah.
Enough credit in books. Usually you have to look
our
at
our mistake. We should have been,
well, it's
naming
it,
them
it's
too.
It's generally not something that's even mentioned outside of the fine print. So you got to look for it.
All right. Let's see. I gave it a 3.75.
Whoa.
Well, are you shaming my score?
No. I just, you're getting very minute.
Yes, I am.
With your rankings.
So I know it sounds like a bad score, kind of.
It's above average.
It's not.
It's a B.
Yeah. In keeping with the recipes in the book, I feel like the photos are decidedly simple. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that as a slight. The backgrounds are, it has a very neutral look. The backgrounds are all shades of like white, eggshell, beige,
yep.
Grayish. And the dinnerware is...
Did you say grayish?
Grayish.
I like that.
Yes. And the dinnerware is really neutral as well. Like the plates are like cream color, light terracotta.
Mm-hmm.
You have some in the gray area. There is not a single jewel tone in this book unless it's like green from parsley.
Yep.
It's very, very neutral. Most of the photos are overhead, and oftentimes it's just the plate on its own. There's no accoutrements. It's just the plate filling the frame.
They showed the same amount of restraint with the styling and photography that they did with the recipes.
Yeah. Or sometimes there will be a couple plates in the frame. Usually no more than one or two props, like mm-hmm. a fork or a side bowl of cheese or a side bowl of sauce. And not all the photos are full page.
Right.
And I'll talk about this in the design and layout, but some of them are like half page.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting for the most part seems to be studio lighting.
Mm-hmm.
There's no huge shadows or anything.
If I had to hazard a guess, I would say for something like Milk Street Kitchen, where they have like a test kitchen in their campus, It's safe to assume that these were probably all prepared and photographed and styled in a test kitchen setting.
There was one photo that I saw that had like a hard shadow. It was a glass and you could see, you know, and how when you can see in the shadow, like the light
mm-hmm.
reflection, it was like that. And I was like, ooh, getting fancy with the lighting.
They went off script for that one.
Totally.
They brought it outside.
I feel like the photography was really understated. It was nice. It didn't quite cut. Like, I don't think the photos crossed into like making the book feel like a textbook category,
mm-hmm.
but they were very kind of austere.
Yeah.
But they do the job. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. The photography to me almost had like a stock food photo feel to it. I don't mean that to sound as like an insult to the photographer. They just, there weren't a lot of bells and whistles, and I don't think that this is that type of book. So it's not something that I would normally like deduct points for. And by the way, I gave it a 4.
Okay.
But it had a very sparse feel to it. There weren't much in the way of linens or flatware. It was very minimal aesthetic. Mostly hard surfaces too. Like sometimes we'll see things plated on like fabrics or tablecloths, and there wasn't a lot of that in this book. As you mentioned, neutral color palette with a lot of beige and gray ceramics. Very inviting, I would say. The photos were aspirational without being intimidating, which fits nicely with the theme of this book. So, you know, it's hard to find fault with them. They were they were fine photos. Design and layout.
What'd you give it?
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
Many of the Milk Street series share a similar look. The chapters are divided into popular topics. So for this one, it was like flatbreads and sandwiches, one pan meals, pasta, stir fry dishes, things like that. I will say the font size is a bit small, but I just say that about everything because I can't see.
No, it truly was small.
It was kind of small. Aside from some brief single page introduction by the author, there is literally no additional information in this book. Perfect for those who just want a collection of easy recipes. Many of the recipes will feature a list of optional garnishes. This is something we mentioned previously, which need to be noted if you plan to include them on your grocery shopping list. Tucked within the book are collections of recipes assembled on the same pages that share like a similar method or technique. So there would usually be like one group shot of the collected dishes, and then they'll have like the individual recipes on the following pages. What I liked about this was it's kind of a choose your own adventure type of thing while giving you some options. So it's a nice way if you're paging through these recipes where, you know, maybe there's like this technique that sounds interesting to you, but the first recipe that's offered is not something that really appeals to you. But, you know, then there's like 3 or 4 other options using that same technique. And I just thought that was kind of a nice way to maybe inspire some people to get cooking, but also give them options to suit their particular tastes. So a 4.
Okay.
What'd you have?
I gave it a 4 as well. Like you said, in terms of extra information, this book is super bare bones.
Literally nothing. No, not even that requisite pantry section.
I know. It just jumps like right into the recipes.
Yep.
Like you said, there's 8 different chapters. In the chapters, there will be a couple little collections of various foodstuffs, like quick pickles, vinaigrettes, salsa. You mentioned that already. Usually it contains like 4 different recipes, those little sections.
Right.
Earlier, I was mentioning that some of the photos were half page.
Correct.
And for those photos, the printing is done. The recipes are usually printed on white paper. But for those pages that have the photos on them, the font is on the page and it's the color of the background. So there are like some different color pages.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
You didn't notice that?
No, but obviously like a conscious design choice or theme.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as the actual recipe page, like the font is very, very small and it's broken down in, for the most part, the recipe pages are broken down in 2 columns, right-hand side, left-hand side. There on the right-hand side, there is the title. There's a title that is in a larger font, which I wish the whole book was in.
Right.
And underneath that, there's a start to finish time. And then there is a serving size, how many people it serves.
Right.
Underneath that, the head note and the ingredients are on the right-hand side of the page. And the method is on the left-hand side of the page. No frills.
No frills.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I feel like I'm just like leaving. I'm just like, oh, duh. No, there's nothing else.
All right. Degree of difficulty.
I gave this a 2.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say we chose some of the simple. Oh, you know what?
They're all simple.
They're all simple. And also, this book has no baking in it, just so people know. There's not a
All
single,
you need is a hot plate.
There's no little, baking
little
whatsoever.
Little stovetop induction burner or something.
No, I mean like baking.
That's
like,
what I'm saying, but you don't even need an oven. You just need like a little hot plate to make all these dishes.
Yes, that's true.
A campfire stove. Don't do that inside, though. You'll die.
I thought you were referring to, like, there's nothing in this book that gets baked. And I'm like, no, that's not what I mean.
You can make all this stuff in prison, is what we're saying. Or a science class, a high school science class.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
I used to be an aide in a study hall to a teacher.
Oh, now you're just bragging.
He kept a hot plate in his room, and we would occasionally cook lunch in his room.
Oh, yeah, I can picture this guy. Yep.
He was like 75 years old with like white hair and a large white beard. In case you were thinking he was some
Lots
kind
of
creep.
Cats. Lots of cats, I suspect.
He probably did have a lot of cats. Yep. He was really awesome. His name was Mr. Rapp. R.I.P. Mr. Rapp. Yep. Anyway.
He didn't use that break room microwave.
No.
He was like staying in his classroom, grading papers.
He's like, I'm going to.
Cooking up some soup.
No, he would cook up steak.
Oh.
He would cut up steak, cook it up. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
At least he said it was steak.
It was steak.
You don't think it
I don't think
like
it was horse.
A missing teenager?
No. No. Okay. No.
All right.
What did you give it?
For degree of difficulty?
Yeah.
A 2. It doesn't get much easier than this. Any competent home cook should be able to successfully navigate this book. We did feel as if some of the dishes could have benefited from another ingredient or two, but you have to give Milk Street props for their ability to show restraint on these recipes. And it reminds me of that series that we've watched on YouTube where the chefs will cook the same dish while giving them separate treatments, like the beginner, intermediate, and like restaurant level dish. This would definitely be that beginner level
yes.
dish. But that's not a fault of the book. I think they
fully intend to do
they
that.
They successfully achieved their goal of making this just a this would be the book that you buy for someone that's going away to college mm-hmm. or maybe some newlyweds that don't really cook, but they know that they're going to have to start cooking for themselves and, you know, that kind of thing. So mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, taste. What did you have, Victoria?
I gave it 3.
All right.
The recipes are really easy. The flavors are solid. The amount of seasoning called for were fairly accurate for like a mid-range preference regarding like heat and acid, etc. So there's nothing that's going to like blow your wig off. Like, this is really hot. The recipes.
I'll have you know I have a full head of fine silver real hair over here, Victoria.
Silver fox.
No wig for me.
And the recipes are clearly very well tested.
They've got a whole team of people that they pay to develop these recipes. Mm-hmm. So they should be good.
Yes.
They should be solid.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 3 as well.
Okay.
Everything was enjoyable, but all along we kept thinking that some of the ingredients or techniques could have been improved upon in the final dish. But still, very few diners would find fault with any of these meals, and they were delicious. So,
yeah, I think if you're a beginner cook, this... Or like you just say like you like to cook... And you just don't have a lot of time.
I mean,
this
how
is
many
a,
people
such a perfect book.
Do we encounter just in conversation or with the classes that we teach where one of their main objectives is to just start cooking more mm-hmm. for themselves? And so this would be like a perfect book to give someone in that situation.
It's because I understand, like, if you don't know how to cook, it can be super intimidating.
Absolutely.
Like, this book is perfect for that.
Based on your rankings, is this a buy, borrow, or banish for you?
Well, for me personally, I wouldn't buy it because it's
a little rudimentary.
It's rudimentary, but I would highly recommend this for other people to buy.
Fair.
So I don't know. I'll say buy. Yes, buy it.
Okay. I say borrow. Like, okay. I think this would be a good one to maybe check out. At a bookstore, library, borrow from a friend, see if it appeals to you. If you're aware of what your skill level is or what your objective is surrounding cooking, and you know that you're a beginner and that you're just looking to expand your repertoire, or maybe build some confidence, I would say go ahead and buy this and you'll be treated to a lot of good recipes that are easy to execute. Anything else on the book?
I don't think so.
All right. I've got 8.12 fluid ounces of Mr. Brown's cappuccino iced coffee coursing through my veins. That also means we've reached the gastro obscura portion of the show, where you share with us the weird and wonderful culinary traditions, experiences, and ingredients from the book of the same name. You have not shared this with me prior to the show, so I'm in for a treat along with our audience. Where are we going to this week, Victoria?
Okay, so the point of origin for our story is Austria.
Ooh.
So every year, the brewers at Schloss Eggenberg Brewery brew a batch of beer named Santa Claus. They brew it on December 6th, which is also known as St. Nicholas Day.
Okay.
So Santa Claus was once known as the strongest beer in the world. There was a scientist named Albert Hurlman who in the early 20th century discovered a strain of yeast that was resistant to alcohol. And so he named it after himself. And he began brewing beer, and he opened dozens of breweries or brew houses that sold more and more potent beers.
So is this yeast strain still available?
Is this... It is. It's called the Hurlman yeast strain.
It's got to work on that name.
Hurlman. It's H-U-umlaut.
I mean, if you think you're cool... You're not
you don't have
naming a yeast strain.
You don't have a yeast strain named after you. You're nothing.
How's that for a conversation starter? Continue.
Okay. So in 1979, he finally perfected the recipe for the Santa Claus, and it became a staple offer of all his breweries. The beer is aged for 10 months. And it boasts an ABV of 14%.
Okay.
It's a Doppelbock, by the way. Albert passed away, and the business remained in the family until 1996. It finally merged with a Swiss company, and the brewery closed for good in 1997. However, the brewers who once worked at the Eggenberg Brewery still get together, and they will craft the annual batch of Santa Claus. It's considered the world's most rare beer. And the older vintages are...
More rare than the stuff I would do on my stovetop that yielded about 48 bottles.
Well, mass produced.
I take issue with that claim.
Anyway, the older batches fetch for some dollars. Is there anything else more I have to say about this? Oh, obviously, this beer is no longer considered the strongest in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I've encountered... ones with a higher ABV than that.
Yeah.
Okay. But back in the day, I mean,
oh my
that
God,
was
that was probably mind blowing. You're like, what? When yeah. everything was like 4%, 3%.
Yeah. The trend has definitely been in recent years to like, you know, more extreme ABVs. And
I feel like the past 10 years, it's been like, how high can we get this? Yeah. And now it's kind of coming back down.
Oh,
like people are more
God.
Interested.
All those hoppy IPAs, it got a little out of control.
It really does. And it's funny because I used to love like the super hoppy IPAs.
As did I. And then I just at some point realized that they're incredibly bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So just like you. Wow.
I mean,
I just came up with that joke on the fly.
No lies detected, but... Okay, well, if you enjoyed this episode, please rank and review us. You can follow us on our socials. Our Instagram is at @we_cook_books, and our Facebook is at @wecookbooks.
All right, I got a few jokes for you.
All right. Make me Oof. Laugh.
We just watched a documentary, a little short documentary on YouTube about the heartwarming relationship between Bob Newhart and Don Rickles,
Aww.
Who were lifelong best friends to the point where they would take vacations together with their wives. Their wives were best friends. Bob Newhart was married for what, over 60 years, 70 years, long time. Mm-hmm. He's an inspiration to us all. And I feel like I should read these like in the Don Rickles voice or something.
Oh, you're doing Don Rickles jokes?
I don't need to. just in the spirit of Don Rickles. Well, anyway, bad idea, perhaps. But yes, joke time.
Okay.
Dad food jokes.
Okay.
I cooked dinner last night. It was gumbo that I made with just sausage and okra. It wasn't really good or bad. It was meaty okra. Huh? No?
No.
I think the Don Rickles voice would have helped. My girlfriend's such a bad cook. She uses the smoke alarm as a timer. Right?
That leans more toward... That's giving me Rodney Dangerfield, sir.
Oh, I could lean into that. Okay, I got a good one. This is it.
Okay.
Third time's a charm. Mm-hmm. So this old man walks into a bar. He sits down. Starts crying. The bartender looks at him and says, "What's wrong?" And the old man looks at the bartender through his teary eyes and starts sobbing. "I married a beautiful woman 2 days ago. She's a natural blonde, 25, intelligent, a marvelous cook, a meticulous housekeeper, extremely sensitive, very giving, my best friend, intensely passionate in bed." The bartender stares at the old man for a brief moment and says, "That sounds great. Every man in the world would want a woman like that. So why are you crying?" And the old man looks at the bartender and says, "I can't remember where I live." Right?
That was a lot of buildup for no punchline.
Not even a laugh. Not even a little like...
Baby, it
not
needs,
even a sigh.
It needs to be funny if you're going to make me laugh.
Oh, man. I'll let our listeners decide. That's all I got. Fail. Joke fail.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a fantastic week.
Stay safe.
Stay hungry.